This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello and welcome back to Saturday Night Shaggy. It's been a while, but we have a special episode for you guys. I and Lum and V-Lord actually went to Anime NYC last weekend, and we got to catch the screening of episode 1 of Tale of the Outcast, which is a Shogakukan manga. We may have talked about it before on previous episodes. But, yeah, we're gonna talk about that. And I'd like to introduce to you all my lovely co-host, Sakaki. Say what's up.
Say what's up?
Alright, buddy. There's a reason I'm recording this show. Never mind. Anyway, V-Lord, say what's up.
Say what's up? Or hi? All right. Cool.
Okay, you cheeky V-Lord. Bastard.
I started a fad. I'm popular now, Mom.
And our very own special guest, Lum, say what's up.
Say what's up, I will, because this outcast got a tail, and you're stepping on it, so get off because it hurts.
Bars. That's exactly why we got you on the show. But yeah, A Tale of the Outcast is, I haven't read the manga at all, so I went into this completely blind. All I know is that you both as in my normal co-host, Sakaki Bieler, have told me, like, good things about the manga. And, I was looking forward to it, because I didn't realize that anime was coming out so soon. I think in, January, right?
Yep, January 8th.
Yeah, so it's coming out pretty soon. Apparently, Lem was watching the PV earlier, and, a lot of the clips from episode 1 were... Or a lot of the clips in the video were from episode 1, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And they also sampled the OP, right?
Yeah, I mean, the OP is in the trailer.
Since we didn't get to see it during the preview, aside from 5 seconds.
They skipped all the openings and endings during that screening of Crunchyroll Winter 2023 premiere highlights.
Yeah, the DJ was strapped for time.
I guess they had an hour block, and technically these shows are like 24 minutes apiece, so I guess if you remove OPs, EDs, you save 3 minutes from each show, you narrowly fit it into the hour, which it's a little bit over.
Yeah.
Oh, so they had opening endings on them and they just skipped them, because I just assumed they had episodes without them.
No, they had the openings and endings. Like,
It was the straight up episode file. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It was the full episode file they just had as an MP4. They just manually skipped the openings and endings.
It looked like they were running it like VLC media player or something.
Yeah, they were.
God, like, oh, okay. Like, because when you guys kept saying that, I just assumed that, because, you know, sometimes the screenings, they don't have the opening endings on them, so I just assumed they just didn't have it, but now hearing you... They actually, you could have seen them, they just didn't let
you. We could have. We literally saw the opening for Outcast for 5 seconds, and then they skipped it.
Wow. Wow.
And then we saw the full ED of the final one, the Ice Blade Sorcerer, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, I guess they didn't care at that point. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Outcast premiere came in the middle of, like, this block of 3 premieres that they had at Anime NYC. Which the first one was, I don't even remember. I didn't even watch it. I just stepped out.
The reincarnation of the strongest exorcist or something.
Yes, yeah. Very forgettable.
And then the last one was Ice Blade Sorcerer, which was also pretty boilerplate isekai, but was at least very funny.
Yeah, it was very generic, but funny.
It was based generic, okay?
Sure. It was also where he wrote, because the dialogue in that, my God, we had the same interaction in that show 6 times where the character introduced himself to a new female character was like, "Hi, my name is Ray White." And then X character was like, "Hi, I'm Lee. You can call me by my first name." Okay, Mr. White. And they just keep going back and forth like that for interminably. It was just, I couldn't believe it.
There was also that bog standard guy that was always hating on White. Like, without one name.
No, the fact that the bully guy kept yelling at him and screaming, "Ordinary!"
Funny. So funny. Like, they still say ordinary in English.
Oh, man, you all are making me... If it wasn't obvious, I wasn't at ANYC this year with everybody. So, and they're making me really wish I'd gone.
Yeah, We're just making sure Sakaki comes next year, you know? Because that's what friends do.
I'm going to make sure.
Miss you.
Yeah, I was, and I missed you. I saw all of your exploits on Twitter and, you know, the stuff that you talked about a little bit on Discord. And I was like, dang, I surely should have gone or figured out something. So, I mean, if you're listening to this, definitely tell ANYC that you think that WSSTV should be allowed.
Bestie.
You should tell them, because we 2 years in a row we got denied press privileges. I mean, the last year I just paid for everybody in the outlet to go, which, you know, that's what a boss should do.
Thanks, boss.
But this year, like, by the time we got, like, anything, the badges were, like, really expensive, and Saturday was completely sold out. So it just wouldn't have made sense to pay, like, $100 for a day. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's what shit happens when you have fucking Hajime Isayama come on Saturday and fucking shit show. Not even, like, half the people try to get into the fucking panel. Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are going to have a whole, like, podcast about that, so...
Yeah, and we'll save our full con discussion for that. We should get back to our tale of watching Chael the Outcast.
Okay, so, Sakaki, since you are Mr. Shaggy, I want you to give us a quick back of the blurb. What is Chael the Outcast? And who came up with it? Who was the genius?
Tale of the Outcast or Night of the Outcast, which I get those both confused because it's in Japanese, it's literally Night of the Outcast. So, but the subtitle is Tale. Go figure. But yes.
Oh, like the Ruby text? The Furigana?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's Noke Mono Tachi no Yoru, which is Tale, Night of the Outcast. So, like, and then in English, it's Tale of the Outcast. So, I always get that confused when I'm, like, reporting upon it. But it's by Makoto Hoshino. It ran, I really should have had this up, but it ran a Shonen Sunday for 8 volumes?
Yeah, 2019 to 2021.
August to April.
Yes, and yeah, August 7th, 2019, yep, April 14th, 2021, yep. So it ran a Shonen Sunday, I mean, pretty decent run. I mean, I was talking to everybody off mic about this, but the weirdest thing about it is Shogakukan really advertised the heck out of this. Like, they released the first two volumes, like, a pretty close to each other or something like that. They gave it color pages quite frequently, and yeah, it seemed like they really wanted this to succeed, and unfortunately it didn't. And even more so... Like, it's hard to tell if it got canceled or it just reached its natural point. Because the artist, Hoshino Sensei, like, not that one. Yes, I'm bringing that back here. This isn't D. Gray Man, everybody. It's a different one. But, like, Hoshino Sensei, like, was suffering some medical issues towards the end. So, and it was going on break pretty frequently. Like, not long enough to be called a hiatus, but it'd be, like, in an issue, then out two, then back an issue, then out another one. So, like, it's hard to tell if they were just like, yeah, we'll just pull the plug on this. This is obviously not working for you, and it's not selling, or whatever. And I don't remember the ending offhand, which I wouldn't spoil here anyway. So, yeah, so when it got announced that I was getting an anime, it was kind of baffling. But essentially, the plot is about Wisteria, who's an orphan girl who lives in the British Empire towards the end of the 19th century-ish or so. And she's, I mean, I hate to say, kind of fits this template of the slave girl being saved by the magical beast dude. But that's really it. And that's probably why it got an anime, because it just fits that template.
Very reminiscent of Ancient Mingus' Ride, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really hits that. I will say, I haven't seen the Ancient Magnus Bride, which shame on me. So, but I will say...
It's okay, it's about a skull fucker.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Okay. That's one way to put it, Mary.
It certainly makes me want to watch a little bit more now. What?
Oh. Sakaki, I didn't know you were into that, but okay.
Okay, well.
Listen, talking with this group has awakened me to things that...
You're more of a necrophile than to bestiality. Gotcha.
No, I'm kidding. But, like, yeah, it fits definitely that kind of thing that's very popular nowadays. So maybe Shikakukan was like...
Skull fucking?
Considering how Conan's birth was just, we want something like Ken Daiichi, but in our magazine, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe, you know, Shikakukan just approached Hoshino, was just like, yeah, would you mind doing that? And we'll promote it. So, maybe... But anyway, she's Mysteria's like a slave girl, and she meets up with this powerful being called Marboss, and he's basically immortal, but nobody can see him. I mean, she can, and so the two of them, like, and basically, she's a lonely orphan girl, he's an immortal demon with no friends, and, you know, they basically become kind of like, they have a friendship between them. And, yeah, I mean, that's the basic premise. And then, well, I guess we'll get into, like, the particulars of... Because I know V-Lord told me what the first episode covered, but I don't remember. So, but that's basically the premise. I mean, I guess the difference between this and maybe... I don't know. Again, I haven't seen Magnus Bride, so I don't know. But, like, is that it definitely becomes more of a battle shonen very quickly.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that the guy is a kimono, not a...
Okay, there's that too. He's definitely more of on the furry side of persuasion than the skull. But
yeah,
but like, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing. And like, I will say, just looking at the manga, just from the manga, what I've read, and I've read pretty much all of it, although I can't remember everything. But yeah, it's got really nice artwork, and I do like the two leads a whole lot. So those are definitely strong points for it. But yeah, and then, like I said, it got an anime, and here we are. Possibly I'll be able to check that out January, but what did you guys think of it?
Well, for the most part, well, I'm gonna say this up front. I had the most favorable impression out of the three, shows that were screened together at that,
yeah, easily.
At that event. Yeah, I had the most favorable impression of Outcast. So... Basically, I thought that it told the most coherent and, like, I don't want to say competent, but, like, it's the one that actually tried to tell the story. That I felt that, like, okay, like, trying to get something, like, emotionally resonant out within the span of, like, an episode. So, like, I'm like, hey, yo, you're kind of trying for something here. So, that made me want to, like, keep watching. Like, you know, yeah, I don't know. Like, for the most part, when it comes to a lot of these shows that get adapted, they're like multimedia franchises, and they're just like, hey, we're trying to sell more copies of X series or whatever, like the source material. And since this one is already like completed, I don't really see the point in kind of like drumming up that kind of support. I think this is probably either like a producer passion project or like someone who was just like, hey, I think it would be neat to get this out there in animated format. And I think,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think I would agree with that person, because I was engaged enough to want to keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think mm-hmm. like definitely the biggest draw of Tale of the Outcast is kind of that relationship between like Wisteria and Marboss.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like mm-hmm. the first episode, while it definitely condensed quite a bit of the first chapter, it still, I feel, conveyed across like...
You think it condensed it rather than expanded on it?
I guess it condensed... Actually, not. I guess it did expand it.
I read the first chapter just today. Like, I went into this premiere completely blind in terms of, you know, I hadn't read the manga before. And so I read the first chapter today in preparation for this, and I was like, okay, well, pretty much everything in this first chapter was in the episode, but they expanded. They added a whole lot more to the story.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I guess like I'm thinking less chapter one and more like the other chapter put in. Like
well, they completely recontextualized what they took from that chapter.
Yeah, that's true.
Into the story of the first chapter. So it's like they expanded the story of the first chapter by adding in an extra element from that later chapter.
Yeah, so I guess that's not the right word, but like even though they reworked the initial introduction, like it still conveys the same key points.
Yeah. I think it did it in some ways even more strongly than the first chapter. I think that having this, you know, palpable danger that is, like, very visible, like seeing Vesteria, you know, be taken by this noble who buys her, basically. And then, you know, in the manga, like, the priest who sells her off, like, kind of taunts her by saying, hey, I heard that this guy has a reputation for torturing young kids or whatever.
But we never actually see it.
We don't see it in the manga. But also, like, in the anime, he doesn't say that to her. It's that we don't find that out until later, until it's more effective as a twist because Vesteria goes with the guy to his home and he takes her to what she thinks is going to be her bedroom. And then we see, oh, there's a lot of creepy torture stuff on the walls and weird taxidermy stuff, and then the shoe drops, and then it becomes a horror thing. And we understand, oh my gosh, he's in real scary danger here. And that's intercut with, like, you know, the priest kind of giving this reveal to Snow, right? It comes at a better timed moment, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's the other thing. They implement Snow earlier in, because they even add a scene with Snow, like, in the middle of the episode that wasn't in chapter one.
Yeah, no,
don't you mean Kanda?
Stop!
Basically.
I just spent a bunch of time trying to differentiate it.
It is interesting that both these series by Hoshinos have, like, Knights of Order of a Cross in them. But, basically, yeah, I mean, this thing with Snow is, like, at the end of the first chapter, but in this episode they have Snow like appear like in the middle to look for Vesteria and to interrogate the priest and stuff. So again, I think they incorporate him a lot more seamlessly into the story too.
Yeah, and I guess part of it's like hindsight too. Now that the series is over, they probably know what is necessary for what they want to fit in, like what I'd assume is a one core versus what kind of they can put on the cutting room floor.
That's interesting. Like, has it been confirmed to be one core, or that's just your what you think?
That's what I'm just assuming. I can't imagine this is a two core.
It could do be a two core.
Yeah. I think 8 volumes would probably be like a two core. Like, to me, there wouldn't be a point of animating this if they're not going to complete it, since it's already a completed story.
Right. And I mean, it's just going to be a matter of how rushed they want to do it. They could do it in one core if they really wanted to, but, you know, if they take their time with it, there's plenty of material for two core.
Yeah, there definitely is.
I'm always a pacifist. If they haven't announced a second core or whatever, I'm just like, all right.
Yeah, we don't really have a confirmed episode count. That's fair. Especially in the light of something like Hoshinengi, where they did 23 volumes and 23 episodes, it's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's true.
They'll do it in the least amount of episodes they can do it in.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting.
Yeah, because like what I said earlier, like what are they going to promote? The thing is already over.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, I got the sense for this based on how they kind of rewrote the first chapter into this first episode, that this is made by a writing team, particularly that cares about the material and showing off the best qualities of the original work and telling a compelling story out of it. It isn't just like a boilerplate, like, oh, let's just take the manga and just like regurgitate it on screen. It's like, no, let's take the manga, let's flesh it out, and let's make it work for the format, this half hour format, and let's add these elements in that can make the story even stronger and connect and build things up more, which is why I like the addition of like fleshing out kind of the character of the noble who buys Wisteria, and then also having the reveal be that, oh, he had made like this contract with this demon that then Malbus can fight against, and it is during this fight that the situation becomes desperate enough for Marbus to need Wisteria to make that sacrifice of like sacrificing her eyes to form a contract with him to heal him, and then he can take down this demon.
Okay.
Because otherwise he was like crumbling and he was just not able to put up the full fight he could. So I thought that was a really smart choice to add that extra bit of tension and desperation to that scene and make it a really exciting climax.
Because, reading through the first, I read through the half of Volume 1 so far, and, yeah, it definitely comes off at first to be just, like, a kind of thing where it's a very comfy kind of, okay, she's lost her eyesight, but they're both just kind of traveling, seeing things that they, you know, couldn't, that seeing things together now that they have each other. So, I was saying it off mic, I don't want to make it sound like it's very unnatural for it to become, like, a battle manga or any whatever, but it definitely takes its time building that stuff up, but hearing what you all are saying is definitely, it sounds like the anime, because it's working from already completed story, that they can integrate these things or rearrange things to be even more fitting.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, the first chapter, definitely there's no, I won't say there's no sense of that, but there's, you know, right now the only demon we're really introduced to is Marbus, and, you know,
yeah,
he's,
there isn't a fight in the first chapter.
Exactly.
And he's
exactly.
The only demon.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny we mentioned D. Gray Man because, like, the writer of the anime wrote 6 episodes of Hollow.
Of course. It all makes sense.
Felt it in my bones.
And also 14 episodes of Space Brothers, so. So, yeah, so it's interesting that. We mentioned D. Gray Man. I mean, I guess that would be an interesting parallel to compare to.
What's his name? What's the right?
Yamashita Kenichi. Kenichi Yamashita, yes. So, I mean, I'm looking them up now. But definitely, okay. Because from what you're saying, I'm always a person that enjoys it when an anime does different things, but to an extent. Because, like, I know some people are like, I don't want to just watch an anime just, like, as Lum said, regurgitate the manga, just anime format. But at the same time,
tell that to Urasawa.
I mean, but at the same time, there are times that...
I just like throwing shots.
At the same time, I think there's a limit, too. I don't want to read something that's completely divorced from it, either.
Yeah. No, I think that it is very respectful and passionate about the sports material, and that's why it was able to find a way to expand on the story to bring out the best of it in adaptation.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd say the main thing that held this adaptation back is probably the animation, if anything.
The animation is nothing exceptional, but it's also not bad either. It's just, you know, a little stiff in some areas, and it's just not the most excitingly directed fluid action stuff. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's kind of a shame, though, considering how beautiful Hoshino's artwork is in the manga. It's like, I think, like, we were talking about this off mic, but, like, the visuals and the stills look really nice.
Yeah,
but
I think
because
color
it also
design
has to,
is really striking.
Right.
I think
but
if you look at the lighting, the use of colors, like, it's a really nice looking show.
Right. But when we also have to take into account motion and how the characters move, it kind of breaks that immersion that is an element you don't really have to worry about in a manga.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, I think that it is kind of made up for just by its strong performances.
Yeah.
Which I think do a good job in selling, like, the emotion of the characters.
I didn't realize that Wisteria's VA is Hotaru from Bekashi
Tachi.
Yeah,
that's her. Yeah. I mean, I'm just reading now
Ayana Taketatsu.
Yeah, I'm just reading now Hoshino's pedigree, and they've done some Fate stuff. Like, they did some stuff for the comic anthology, so I'd like to see some of their other things. And they had, before Outcast, they had a one-shot in Sunday Webbery in 2000. Well, no, it was a series. Oh, shoot, it was a series for 2 volumes. So, okay. Danshi no I can't read this kanji. But, yeah, I would like to see more of their stuff. Like, yeah. And one thing, oh, yeah, while we're talking about the artwork, one thing I liked that caught my eye when I was reading this originally when it started in Sunday is that Hoshino has a way of using, like, film reels for flashbacks. Like, which is yeah, really interesting.
Now, that I don't think that they replicated
that's
in the show,
a shame.
Or maybe I missed that.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
Yeah, they did not keep that aesthetic in the show, which is a shame. I really like that about the manga, but they didn't do anything but fit the film reel thing.
Yeah, that caught my eye almost immediately, like, when reading the manga, and it's really a nice, because, you know, for people that don't know, generally speaking, manga do have, like, black borders for flashbacks. Like, all of them. This isn't just, like, one or two. Then that's, I guess, the mangaka's way of telling you, okay, this happened before. This isn't currently what's going on. So, Hoshino, on the other hand, you know, was invented with it. A little bit more inventive and has, like, film borders for whenever there's a flashback and within the manga. And this is pretty constant throughout the whole thing. Even with the, like, you'll see one-off panels, and they'll have a film on that one panel, and then go back to current, you know, events, and it's, like, it's really cool how consistent they are with that.
Yeah, it's a really great touch, and it's perfect for the medium of animation, of a film medium, and I don't know why they didn't take advantage of it.
Clearly, they had to take some notes from Pompo.
Exactly. It's no Pompo to Cinephile.
True. True. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, Pompo proves it's doable, but I mean, I guess maybe, you know, on a TV animation timeline, they didn't have that. They couldn't do that. Which is really a shame. Like, that's the one thing I would say that you need to have, like, that an anime should keep. Like, if nothing else. But, okay, well, it is what it is. So, like, what did episode one cover exactly? Just chapter one? And some elements of later ones?
Yeah, basically it covered the first chapter, and then it sort of takes the demon from the third chapter and elements of that fight into the first chapter's plot. In the end?
Yeah, they basically plop the demon that's from that, like, murder, like, story in Chapter 3 and made him, like, the final boss.
Oh. It's not, like, one-to-one. The design's kind of changed a little bit. But, like, the dialogue at the end where, like, the demon's like, oh, crap, you're one of the, like, 13 great demon things, whatever. And, like, Malbus, like, kind of talks him down, really, like, utterly destroys him. That part is, like...
I mean, the design's, like, close enough, though.
It's close enough.
Anime liberty, but it's very clearly that demon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's a good choice, to be honest, because then putting together stories that could basically be just like one-offs or whatever and tying them into a coherent kind of follow-through is, I think that's smart. It's a good way, if you're going to end up condensing stuff, to be able to thematically link them like that.
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
I agree.
Yeah, but I'm looking at chapter 3 now and I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it was well handled. Like if I hadn't read the manga beforehand, I wouldn't have necessarily noticed that they had spliced two chapters together.
I mean, I hadn't read the manga beforehand, and I didn't know that that's not how the story is supposed to go. Like, it was seamless to me. It was like, oh yeah, this builds upon the previous twist. It makes, like, a sense as a natural destination for the end of the story, for Marbus to confront another demon, and then in this, like, really dramatic circumstance for Mysteria to make her offering, her sacrifice, to power him. Yeah, I mean, it made a lot of sense to me. I was actually surprised reading the manga that, oh, that's not how it goes?
Yeah, I mean, okay. As much as I like Marbus' wacky around nobility, I guess fighting a demon is higher stakes to make a contract.
He does that in the episode, too. It's just that, you know, that's not where it ends.
Yeah.
And also, like, the demon that the nobility made the contract with is the guy who kills him, so.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to this. I mean, I do hope it is more than one core, because, like, I just don't see how they... I mean, they could. I know we've talked about it, but, like, it really...
I mean, the pessimist inside me is thinking that they aren't going to try to adapt everything, though. They're going to probably hit, like, the key plot points, and then
I mean they did finish. They did reveal some of the VAs for like later characters, but yeah, yeah. Like I mean, a bunch of like demons. I do remember hearing, like I do remember reading in later chapters. They've already revealed VAs for them, so like I guess there's going to be some attempt to get through as much as possible. But I mean, some pretty big name VAs too. You know, we got Kobayashi Yu, Matsuoka, a couple of them, like, so, Suwabe.
Who are they going to be?
Who? Matsuoka Shitori? Shitori is a demon, I know that much. But, like...
He would be.
So, like, yeah, they've got a pretty nice VA cast here, so, like... And that tends to be the way. Whenever they don't, they can't get, like, awesome-looking animation and makeup for it and just the voice acting. And, yeah, like, all-star cast here.
Yeah.
Like, I think only Diana, who's, like, another, another girl, human girl mixed up in this demon party, she's the only, like, newbie. Everybody else is, like, a veteran.
Oh, wow, yeah. This Risa Imayanagi. Yeah. She has a very sparse cast list where it's like she's in this and she was like a minor character in bottom tier Tamazaki.
It was really interesting because like on Twitter they made a big deal about revealing who Diana's voice actress would be, which was so I was under the impression, oh, they're going to get like somebody with a super huge profile, and no, not really. So I don't know if that's, I don't know if they just felt like she's really a popular or breakout character or something. I mean, I know... From what I remember, she gets her own arc, and that was, like, a really good arc, but, like, I don't recall her being, like, super more popular than anybody else, so when they reveal it's just, you know, because I'm looking at the Japanese wiki, and yeah, she doesn't have a page on this, so, yeah.
I mean, I guess this is going to be a breakout role for this actress.
Yeah, yeah, it could be.
I mean, she doesn't have that many, like, really big credits, so this is, like, her biggest character yet, so... Mm. Pretty cool. Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a story where, again, the manga is much more slow-moving from just what you guys are saying. I mean, and I don't mean to say that in a way that it's, like, a volume of nothing, and then it picks up. Like, by chapter 3, I feels like it does start to move along. So, I mean, of course, being the Sunday guy, I do like that kind of, like, slow roll, but, like, I can also understand how that, especially when you're advertising, as Marion said, a manga that's no longer out there, I can understand wanting to get to, quote-unquote, the good stuff right away, so...
Yeah, I also, I mean, having read the first one today, I actually thought it moved pretty fast in terms of, like, meeting back up with Snow, like, Mysterio reuniting with her brother, and then that conflict resolving, like that all happens in the first volume, and I'm like, wow, then we got to that fast. I thought this is gonna be prolonged a little bit
more. I mean, I might be remembering from the point of view of reading it weekly, so that might be the thing, because definitely, like I was saying it off mic, I have the entire, I do technically own the entire series, I just own it in every Sunday issue that it ran in. So I mean, I have Volume 1 in Japanese that I bought just to kind of, I guess, compare artwork and stuff, but I just never got around to buying the rest. But then it got licensed, which, I mean, again, probably got licensed because they knew the anime was coming. So, because I remember that was a surprise to us when it got licensed for something. I mean, to be fair, it's a short series, you know, not much, you know, to lose with this, and it's...
It'd be surprising if they knew the anime was coming, because they licensed it, like... Shortly around when the manga was ending, Seven Seas, and like the anime didn't get announced until like earlier this year, so
I can actually check that. But yeah, I mean, either way, it was a surprising. The anime got announced, June 30th, 2022. Just looking at Comic Natalie, so around that time.
And Seven Seas like started releasing the manga last year.
That's still like a year though.
So. No, it was like last year. They started June 2021. They licensed it like earlier in 2021. No, they licensed it like on August 28, 2020. So like...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that. Okay.
I don't know if like almost 2 years in advance they knew that an anime was coming.
Yeah, okay, no. Yeah, that does make... Yeah, no, yeah, I'm maybe not.
Seven Seas can just predict the future.
Maybe.
I think it was probably a publisher thing where they're like, hey, get this series because we're just going to get an anime soon and we'll give you something else that you want.
Get the series, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. Because I can imagine Shogakukan wanting to get... I mean, again, they advertise the mess out of this. So, like, I can imagine them maybe even, just, you know, nudging somebody to pick this up.
Pushing the license.
Okay, so no, I was wrong. The first two volumes did not come out at the same time. It was the third and fourth. They both came out June 18th, 2020. So the final volume came out May 18th, 2021. Oh no, the final two volumes. So they had a couple where they just released them together. So yeah, they had so by the time this had been licensed, it was still running. So with Dave, you know,
8-7 Seas, instead of picking up Sobate, go look at this series called Tale of the Outcast.
I mean, like, we at this point we gotta push them to get some more Fujita, but considering that the one that they got didn't sell well, they'll just point at that and be like, see, we tried. Or Kodansha tried. Yeah, I mean, I meant it in the sense that somebody tried. Let me put it that way. somebody tried and it didn't work. Why should we? Especially for a longer series like Sobote, which was, what, 25 volumes?
Yeah, 25, which is still the shortest.
It's still Fujita's shortest series to date, but, like, it's still a lot of volumes for something that may or may not sell. Although, whenever I was reading Sobote on, like, Twitter and stuff, people were all like, yo, what's that? Our buddy Casey was just like, that looks sick.
The moment someone sees them bomb Sobote, that's when you're sold.
We just need an influencer.
Yeah, we needed that Casey bomb. The Monopsy particle accelerator.
Yeah, like I
feel accelerator.
So, all right. So, I mean, I guess what we're saying here is definitely maybe the animation isn't the greatest, but this is still worth checking out, at least out of what Crunchyroll showed. And as we stated, since it was at ANYC, it's safe to assume that Crunchyroll is streaming this. Well, will be.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. It's a Crunchyroll show.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think, honestly, even though we're saying like, oh, maybe didn't adapt one-to-one or like, the way that they're like fleshing out some things, like, hey, I think this episode was fucking good. I think they did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
No, I think it's a great adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it might not turn many heads because, you know, the animation isn't that remarkable. But in terms of storytelling, in terms of, like, adapting the source material and clearly understanding and wanting to bring out the best in it, it's really good. And mm-hmm. I really, you know, having no knowledge of the source material, I really got into the characters, into the story, and I was left looking forward to seeing more. And I think that the anime will do a good job bringing the future parts of the story to life in animated form really well. So I think that it's a very strong start to the show as an adaptation, and I think that fans of the manga can look forward to it and to how it'll continue to adapt the rest of the story.
Yeah, no, I left a positive impression. I mean, I'd say don't go in expecting Chainsaw Man animation, but
no.
you'll get an enjoyable show.
Yeah.
Much better than the other two shows that we watched.
Yeah, easily. Like, if those other two shows are an indication, winter might not be a great season.
Winter is always overall. like a throwaway season, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, there's Tomo-chan in Nagatoro Season 2.
Yeah, and there's going to be Trigun, obviously, and Tricard. I mean, there could be things. It's just like, you know, compared to the glut of shows that are come out there, you know, Tale of the Outcast is definitely going to be kind of on the top of the pack, like upper percentile of the pack, I would say.
Okay. Well, I guess to ask you this, since I have not read the English version of the manga, like, how's that release handled? Is it handled well by our buddies at Seven Seas, wink, wink, nonetheless?
Oh, yeah, it's really good. The lettering especially is amazing. It's done by Brendan Hull, friend of our friend Aiden.
Ooh.
And the Poggers. Translation's really solid as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm probably... Well, you said how many volumes are out? I know we talked about this off mic.
Six volumes are out, and the seventh volume will come out next May, and then the eighth hasn't been scheduled yet.
Okay, so, I mean, definitely at this point, I'll probably just pick up all of them at once. So, okay, so I'm looking forward to that. I mean, again, reading the Japanese release, definitely, you know, the artwork is a big star in this. I always assumed that Makoto Hoshino had... this was their first, but yeah, apparently they've had a series before this that, you know, I'll definitely have to check that out. Oh, wow. Looking at the, and this is basically just me nerding out now, looking at the assistance list, there's one person that has a serial currently in Sunday, Sanshi Fujita, and Akihisa Maki, who's done a couple of one-shots in Sunday. So, yeah. So just looking at at the end of the book, they had all the assistants that helped them out with this first volume. And yeah. Oh, Uge Besso. I'm not sure how to read that kanji. But yeah, they did a couple comedy manga for Sunday as well. So Hoshino, all of their assistants have gone on to do some pretty interesting things. And most of them have stuck with Sunday, which is interesting. Because a lot of times you see like assistants go on maybe different publishers to do stuff. But they've not just Shogakukan, but stayed with Sunday.
Nice. Well, yeah. I guess you heard it here first, folks. Tale of the Outcast. Check out the anime. I think, honestly, it might be a cult hit. Even if the animation isn't up to par, the story that it's telling is evocative. And I think that the acting, the lighting, the storyboarding, I think it all does its own part. And it comes together to make a good final product. I, for one, am also gonna be watching it, and yeah, I haven't really been watching that much anime recently at all. It's only like this season I started watching more stuff with our friend Meow, just because like I don't really got time. If I'm gonna watch something, I'd rather watch it with other people.
Yeah,
have a conversation about it.
Yeah, I get that feeling. Like it is just way more fun to watch things with other people, and I'm more likely to finish things if I'm watching them with other people, other than peering out like by myself.
Yeah,
I'm the same way.
Same here. I wish I had someone to watch Better Call Saul with.
I mean, listen, if you will,
I mean, you'll have at least a podcast to keep up with in International Sakaki.
But then I have to wait for Sakaki's episodes to come out to watch said episode.
Well, here's what you do, is that you kind of strong-arm your way to being a part of the podcast, and that way you have someone to talk about Better Call Saul, because you can talk about all the episodes.
Okay, B-Lord, I hear loud and clear, I will be back in L.A., and we can watch Better Call Saul together. I mean, I need to rewatch it anyway, so, like, I started to.
Fuck both of you for not including me.
I mean, we could definitely just have a wild watch Saul party. We could do that. Because, I mean, that show's very Kino. Like,
alright.
Better watch Saul.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on episode 4, and it's already very Kino, so.
See, that's, I know we're off topic, but that's, like, I tried to convince my sisters to watch it. They watched Breaking Bad with me, and like they stuck through with it, even though it was kind of slow at first, but they couldn't hang in with Saul. So I'm kind of surprised. And most people I've heard that are like, they start Saul, and it's like it's kind of slow, so they kind of fall off before the end of the first season. But so you're like the first person I've heard who's like, I already like it, like from the giddy up, you know? So.
I mean, I think it comes, I already liked Saul and Mike. So, like, exactly. Since they're there from the beginning,
see,
it's
you
like,
get it.
It's easy to invest.
Exactly. You get it. Yeah, see, definitely, I'll be...
All I know is that Saul is considered the Germa for boomers. And that I find fascinating. Germa as in the Twitch streamer.
Yeah, we definitely.
I guess I could see it.
Like, yeah, definitely, we'll have to... We will definitely need to... You need to better watch Saul, honestly. I think you would enjoy it, for all things considered. It's a slow burn, but definitely worth it. And, I mean... Anyway, yeah, I don't want to get too off-topic. Clearly, since we're talking about Saul, I guess we're getting towards the end of what we had to say about this. Basically, the show will be on January 8th, you said? It'll be streaming January 8th on Crunchyroll, so you should give it a look-see. The manga's on Volume 6 from Seven Seas.
Sounds like it's a great release. And yeah, you know, and again, this is it's surprising this got an anime, but I'm glad it's here. You know, it definitely sounds like somebody, just people at Shogakukan, pulled some strings and made this happen. And because even on Twitter, Hoshino seemed a bit surprised it got an anime too. So like, but I mean, obviously they would have had to know something before the series ended, but even then, you know, they were kind of thankful and like, I didn't think it happened, but here we are. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I hope it raises the profile of the anime, I mean, the manga a bit, and maybe Hoshino will be back once they're feeling a little bit better. I see they throw out some fan art every so often. I even think they might have gone to London since the series ended. I remember seeing them taking pictures and stuff and just kind of like, you know, having little cardboard cutouts of like Marboss and Wisteria just like taking pictures, like fist selfies of them so on the street. So it would be, it definitely sounds like, you know, they've had some time to recover, and I definitely would love to see them back on Sunday sooner rather than later. So,
all right. Well, I guess this is probably a good time to round out now.
Yep. You heard us regale the tale on this podcast. Go out and watch Tale of the Outcast.
Thank you, Lump.
Or if you wanted right now, go buy the manga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's available both in print and digital, right?
Indeed. I have all of it digital. That's really so far.
Yeah, I'm probably going to get it on Bookwalker with some coins later.
Yep, Marvis's manga is marvelous.
Lum's pun game has become too strong.
Yeah.
Can't stop it.
I mean,
yep, I'm punning done.
I mean, like, I could probably, I'm going to be good and buy this one domestically. Because, I mean, yeah, I could probably go right now and buy the rest of it in Japanese for, like, fairly cheap. But, like, I should support. Instead of just talking about it on podcasts, I should support, like, English releases.
Sakaki, they don't know that. You just outed yourself.
I feel like they do, because we at Viz all the time, they ignore us. So, and, like, as I mean, I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but Shogakukan's blocked us, so I feel like they know, but, like,
I meant the listeners.
Okay, well, I feel like, whatever. I can only be in one place at a time. I can't cover all of the Japanese releases and English releases. So I think people know by now I've chosen a lane, but I'm trying to come out of that lane a little bit and be more supportive of both sides. At least for stuff that is being brought over, and we are at a time now that more Shogakukan stuff is being brought over. I still wish and dream for a day that it could get something like Jump and we could have the whole magazine. But I'll take what we can get.
Yeah, until that day gets here. Lum, why don't you tell us where the people can find you?
You can find me at Lum Royasha on a variety of places, like Animation Revelation, AnyList, Letterboxd, Twitter, for however long Twitter still exists. Wherever there's a Lum Royasha, you will find me there under that name. You can read my writing, my reviews over on mangarise.com. We have a lot of books coming in, a lot of reviews still meaning to get out, so look forward to more on there. That's always, you can find the podcasts that I do, including Manga Mavericks, the podcast where it says manga as a medium and as an industry, reviewing series, covering news, interviewing folks in the industry, having all sorts of great people, including everyone on this podcast on, to talk about series you all love and adore. And you can follow Manga Mavericks on socials, on Twitter at @manga_mavericks. And you can find the YouTube channel by searching for it, youtube.com/ Manga Mavericks. We're also on every podcast platform you can think of, Apple's Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. And of course, we are on Patreon and you can support us on there. And if you want to hear more Shogi manga discussion, in particular and specifically, listen to the other podcast I do, Lum Squad, the Urusei Yatsura focused podcast I do, where we discuss the wonderful and wacky world of Rumiko Takahashi's classic sci-fi rom-com, Urusei Yatsura, having a lot of fun covering the manga as being released by Viz Media, the movies as released by Discotheque and on Crunchyroll, And we are also having a lot of fun talking about the new show that is currently airing, the reboot series. And we're excited to dig back into the old show when Discotech releases Blu-rays for it next year. It's been a great time to be your Scouser fan. A lot of new stuff, a lot of new content to talk about, a lot of podcasts to record and to release. And we're having a good time with it, so look forward to more episodes coming out to your airways and earbuds very soon. And you can follow Lum Squad on Twitter at @Lum_Squad. And find our YouTube channel by searching for Lum Squad in the search bar. And we're also on every podcast platform. You can give Apple's podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor. And we also cross-post episodes in the Long Rats feed and post episodes early, sometimes quite often, a lot early, on the Long Rats Patreon. And if you like the art I make, the thumbnails I draw for my podcast, or the illustrations and animations I make in journal, you can find that stuff on my Instagram at SidArtworks.
Nice. I'm so happy. It's a good time to be a Urusei Yatsura fan. But yeah, definitely.
Oh, it is. It is electrifying. It is rocking the planet. We're putting weird and weird together and making things even weirder every Thursday, and it's great.
Yeah, totally check out Lum Squad and all of Lum's other projects. V-Lord, where can people find you?
Yeah, people can find me on Twitter at VLordGTZ, and then I write various things for the MangaMavericks.com website, as well as Shinami Faithful, so you can check out my reviews and articles over there. Aside from that, I am involved with a number of podcasts with these amazing folks, the head honcho of them being the Demon Slayer podcast at D Slayer Podcast, and then we have Oversoul Shaman King podcast, and Dumb Muse podcast, and of course this podcast. So yeah, check them out. They're good. Probably.
I can vouch for them. They are. So yeah, do check them out. Sakaki, Big Boss, where can people find you?
Big Boss. You can find me at Kirobon on Twitter. That's at KIIROBON. Right now that's really just a retweet zone, but the real fun is at WSS Talkback on Twitter, which is where we talk about Shonen Sunday, the magazine that most people only know from Rumiko Takahashi and Detective Conan. But we're trying our best to educate the masses and show that there's a whole world of other things out there. Like, for example, No Outcast, that ran in Shonen Sunday. There are lots of other magazines out there, magazine-based Twitters out there, but we're the only ones that go through the entire magazine every week. I'm definitely trying to find easier ways to do that, but I don't want to stop. As long as Twitter is alive, we will keep on putting. I'm looking into alternatives, but I really don't want to learn another platform, so we'll see how that goes. We also have WSS talkback.blogspot.com, which is where we have translations of interviews with mangaka editors, and most recently a kind of talkback on going to Otakon and CR Expo. And we always look forward to having those there, and maybe I'll be moving some of the stuff there too, because reading comprehension is bitching. And it would just be easier for me. It would just be easier for me to like write about new series there than it is to do a tweet. But we'll see how that goes. And as always, if anybody's interested in writing about Shogakukan stuff, doesn't have to be Shonen Sunday. Shogakukan is such a big and confusing publisher, so there are lots of magazines out there that you might be reading right now. You know, not to alarm you, but you might be reading a Shogakukan manga right now. So if you're like, geez, I really want to read about this or write about this, and I want to tell other people about it, then we're always accepting guest writers. I mentioned it the other day that somebody offered to write a review on the Maiko-san live action thing that's coming to Netflix. I forgot when, but they wrote us a rundown of the anime, and they're willing to do it for the manga too. So they're a really passionate fan of that. And yeah, if you are reading something from ChicagoCon and you want to write about it, please, by all means. We're always looking for guest writers. besides that, I write for Toonami Faithful. I wrote an Otakon write-up there, so check, give that a look-see. I also am on a podcast, besides the podcast that V-Lore mentioned, I'm on a podcast with our good friend Colton at Another DB Pod, which is Another Day, Another Adventure, where basically if Goku's in it and it's animated, we'll probably get around to talking to him about it at some point. If there's anything that I've done that has a lifetime a lifetime commitment, that's that. That would be this show. But no, it's a lot of fun. Like, we're working our way through Dragon Ball, and as much as we make jokes about how we're going to be at this forever, it's moving pretty quickly. I mean, we're not quite half, but, you know, once we get back to recording, we'll be able to start putting out really quickly of that. Yeah, and I think that's generally where, you know, you can find me on the interwebs if you're interested, so check it out.
Nice. Yeah, definitely check out Sakaki's work. I kind of got my foot a little bit in the door also writing for WSS Talkback. It's always fun when you find something that you're really passionate about and someone else is there to like help push you into it, and Sakaki's definitely that person. So if you ever feel like working with us, just send a shout out. We'll definitely work something out. This has been Saturday Night Shoggy. You can find us on social media at Sat Night Shoggy. Twitter, yeah, I don't know how long that's gonna be around. we should probably find somewhere else just in case. But our podcast can be found anywhere that podcasts can be found, on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, you name it. If they host podcasts, we're probably there. Do us a favor. If you've been listening, and you liked it, leave us a like, a comment, a rating, anything, help boost us in the algorithm. I've been Marion. You can find me on Twitter at microwavy, the E before the V. I have a link with all my other projects there on my card. I've written for WSS Talkback. I write for Toonami Faithful. I'm actually doing a con write-up for them for Anime NYC because they helped me get a press badge. And I've also recently started writing for Comics Beat. I wrote a One Piece Film Red review there, and I also wrote about this webtoon on Naver called True Beauty, which is it's a very dramatic. It's something that, like, honestly, my first gut impression was like, this is kind of like Peach Girl, but like less messy, which is a good thing. But yeah, that one ended up being a pretty long review. It feels good to write, so I'm glad, because this past like year and a half after the peak of pandemic has been pretty rough. So getting back into writing has been pretty satisfying. But besides that, oh, I should have done this the other way around. I already did the socials for SNS. But yeah, this has been Saturday Night Shoggy. Tell the Outcast is pretty fun. Once again, do check it out. Seven Seas puts out the manga digitally and on print. If you're into that, if you have book space, I'm trying to think of something clever here. I see London, I see France, I see Marbus. Wait, no, I can't. Get it? Alright.
I was thinking.
Have a great night, everyone. Oh god. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night Shock. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sayonara.